This Veterans Radio program is dedicated to all the men and women who are serving now and those that have served in the past in our military.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Bob Gould.
Ah, yes, good morning and welcome all of you out there in our listening audience all around the world. Welcome to another edition of Veterans Radio, where we give a voice to America's veterans, both past and present. Isn't that wonderful? We like doing this stuff. By the way, if you have any comments for us and our guests today, you may call us while we're on the air of 1-877-573-7825. We welcome those. We welcome those comments. 877-573-7825. We also welcome your events. That's right. How would you like to hear your event being broadcast worldwide right here on Veterans Radio? Well, how do I do that, Bob? Well, here's how you do it. You go to our website, veteransradio.net, and all the contact information. Tell us just a little bit of detail on when your event's going to be, where it's going to be, and all the little accoutrements have to do with your event, whether it might be a fundraiser, et cetera, et cetera. There's going to be a lot of that going on this summer. So do go to veteransradio.net. We will give it a plug, just like we are going to be this one on July 17th in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We have quite an Ann Arbor audience. Washtenaw County, Ann Arbor, southeastern Michigan. There's going to be a Sousa-style concert in Ann Arbor, Michigan at the Westside Fair. West Park. That's what I want to see. Nina, you got to help me out on this. Oh, and by the way, folks, here she is with her hair up in an olive oil bun. She looks a little bit like olive oil. Welcome, Nina.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you for the apt comparison.
It is that. Absolutely. That's right. She's slender like that, too, folks. But anyway, the West Park Civic Band is going to have a Sousa concert on July the 17th. And all that information, you're going to want to go to the Ann Arbor Parks and Recreation. So once again, if you have something that you would like us to give a national shout to, well, let us know. Go to veteransradio.net. There's some things that have been happening. Oh, I know. And coming up is an air show that's an annual event called Thunder Over Michigan right here in Ypsilanti, Michigan, which is just outside of Ann Arbor and just west of Detroit. On August the 10th and the 11th, the Yankee Air Museum, yankeeairmuseum.org, I think I should say that correctly, has all that information. Or Thunder Over Michigan, their annual air show, is going to have everything. It's going to have Sky Raiders. It's going to have an ME-262 Messerschmitts. It's going to have displays. It's going to have reenactment. It's something for the whole family. It's a destination, somewhere where you can go take the family. Oh, will the kids have any fun? They're going to have a lot of fun there. There are static displays of aircraft. There will be opportunities to talk with the reenactors, opportunities to talk with pilots, opportunities to talk with one another. They even have priority seating. You can go on an airplane flight. Wow. Everything for everybody. There's plenty of food, plenty of amenities, fresh water, et cetera, et cetera. You want to get yourself to Willow Run Airport and the annual Yankee Air Museum. The Thunder Over Michigan, I'm reading this here, yankeeairmuseum.org/airshow. There you go, yankeeairmuseum.org/airshow. Okay, next item. We're kind of doing a little laundry here. I was, as I usually do in the morning, peruse the Detroit Free Press, and down at the bottom on page 2, and I was showing it to Nina, this thing isn't more than an inch and a half of a tiny, tiny. Notice that there was the U.S. Navy announced that a drone had landed on an aircraft carrier. Folks, do you know how significant that that is? Think about that. No pilot. First of all, how difficult it is to land on an aircraft carrier. We've had pilots on this program. We've had captains. We've had crew. And they talk about the pitching and rolling deck on an aircraft carrier, how most dangerous landing for a pilot. And this is done without a pilot. Think of what that's going to change. We will be able to send an aircraft carrier with drones to anywhere in the world. And I'm looking at, it's called the X-47B. It's going to be in service in 2019. That's 5 years from now. 5 years, that's nothing. That's a eep, and that's it. It reaches a maximum altitude of 40,000 feet. Isn't that space? Nina, is that space? How far up is space?
Space as far as I'm concerned.
Well, how far before you're on the edge of space, I believe? And it has a range of over 2,000. This is the one that they landed, this X-47B, that it refuels during flights, and it has a payload of 14,000 pounds. Now, when you think of that refueling during a flight, remember, there's no pilot. So somebody somewhere is guiding this thing, and in a remote location, might even be on board. I suppose that doesn't even matter at this. But it's the capability. So I was talking to Nina about that this morning. There would be later, as things progress, there'll be no such thing as a suicide mission. Because there'll be nobody there to have suicide. Think of that. They will be able to just send the mechanical, send the planes. I mean, I read this, and we have. You can go on our archives at veteransradio.net and check out the past programs that we've had on drones. We've had Dr. Rebecca Grant from the United States Air Force think tank talking about them. And here it is now. One landing on an aircraft carrier. I will be doing a program about that shortly, folks. That's right. And there are, in reading here, it touched down on the USS George H.W. Bush, and it's the first in aviation history, and it's so difficult, but it signals a role for drones in warfare beyond just routine surveillance. And I'm going to leave you with this thought. And Dr. Grant talked about that. And, don't worry. We're not sitting on our duffs on this, folks. We're making plans, all sorts of plans to protect this wonderful nation of ours. But that an adversary could launch hundreds all at once. Here they come. And right now, the capability of being able to shoot them all down just isn't there. And I asked Dr. Grant, and she says, yes, it is a threat. So here it is. Now we can have them on aircraft carriers. There's other countries. China is developing their own drone system. I understand that even North Korea, I mean, it's really getting to be Buck Rogers. And those of you that don't know who Buck Rogers is, well, that's Mrs. Rogers' son. That goes back into the 40s. And Flash Gordon, I'm amazed by this. Okay, that's enough of that. We will be doing that program very, very shortly. So you're going to want to keep in touch with us on our website. Here we go. One last item. Now, Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Constitution, we have the right to pursue happiness, to have liberty, and to pursue happiness. What does that mean, pursue happiness? Does that mean to go out and party every night? No. It means your personal happiness, your life, liberty, and personal happiness. Well, here comes Little Wayne. Little Wayne, of course, he's not so little anymore. You can call him Big Wayne, I guess. But he walked on an American flag. during the filming of a video. And those of you that haven't heard that or seen it, you can go on YouTube, Google it, and you can watch it. Now, later on, he said it was a mistake. Folks, that's no mistake. No. No, 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 no. And there are codes, the U.S. flag code, and it does prohibit certain activities with the flag. But that's not the point of my saying this. Of course, we're all enraged, and what the comments were on folks that have reacted to seeing that. Here's one from a gentleman. Has anyone seen this video of Lil Wayne trampling the U.S. flag? Google it, and if it doesn't bother you, you can unfollow me. Here's another one. Lil Wayne stepping on flag, just as disrespectful as the lyrics. If he was bold enough to do it, he should be bold enough to admit it, that it was. And do we have, we do. We have somebody that's phoning in on this?
No, I would like to make a comment about that, actually.
Oh, please do, yes. Let's hear from the younger folks.
I suppose it's well within Lil Wayne's rights, to his First Amendment rights, to display that kind of disrespect towards his flag. But I guess what really strikes me here is that he's doing this as a protest, presumably, and I don't see him as a politically active individual. So what right does he have to disrespect the flag in our country when he's not very politically active as an individual?
I believe a lot of this is just for the attention. He certainly got a lot more attention, as now that I'm looking at and Googling all the sites. But more when I thought about it, yes, we're maybe not even outraged. We're just disgusted that somebody would do something like that. And so it does say that all the sacrifices that were made by the soldiers and sailors and airmen so that this person could do something like that.
Right.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As disgusting as we would look at that and feel about that and the gut feeling that we have, still doesn't take it away. I wonder how many that have never made the beaches at Omaha could still say to this person, I did this so that you could do that. So that's my comment on Lil Wayne. As far as Lil Wayne himself, well, just before we go to a break, here it is, Lil Wayne. Hit it, Nina.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Oh, yeah, Buffalo Springfield. Mm-hmm. For all that it's worth. For all that it's worth is something we're going to be talking about today. Spying, intelligence, what was going on in Vietnam. the other day, a couple of weeks ago, actually, I was making some phone calls, and our next guest, his wife, was on my list to call because there is another issue that she's involved in a fundraising. But I happened to get her husband, Jim, and we start talking about what he did in the service. And we've never really did a program on G2 intelligence, spying, listening in on the other guys, codes, etc. And it had my interest so much that I invited Jim to be on the program today. So as our next guest, James Wolterman. He is from the U.S. He enlisted in the U.S. Army. He had his basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina, Fort Devens, and then he got himself into, well, we're just going to ask him what we need to call this. Should it be intelligence spying or what? So Veterans Radio, welcome James R. Wolterman to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, and thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the program. And I had Jim give me a list of bullets here, and even that's kind of secret. It's cryptic. What Jim, when you were in the Army, you were in Vietnam, you were trained as a what? What was your MOS?
I was an 058, which was a Morse code interceptor. But let me back up just a second. If you and I had this phone conversation last year, I couldn't tell you anything, Bob. Because when I got out in 1972, when I was debriefed, I actually signed a document stating that I could not talk about what I did for 40 years. So,
what would they do? How? What would happen to you? I mean, I'm not laughing at this. It's, because my brother was in SAC, and he was in S2, G2, whatever that was for SAC, and he had the same thing. So did you, so the 40 years was up?
The 40 years was up February last year, yes.
Are you going to write a book?
Well, you know, and that's quite funny. I have talked about that, and more guys who served in the Army Security Agency around the world are coming out with books because they've come out. I was, you know, toward the later part when I went to Vietnam in 1969, when enlisted in 1968. There's guys that were over there in the early 60s. So their 40 years are up. And almost monthly, new memoirs and new books are coming out about what the ASA did in Vietnam and around the world. So it's very interesting. If people are interested to find that out, just Google ASA.
Well, I did. I didn't know all of this about ASA. We just assume that these things are taking place. Yeah, right. Yeah. Somebody's taking care of that. But here you are, somebody who was there, and you are the first person that we have interviewed on Veterans Radio that has been part of the ASA. Who is it? Is the ASA directly going to the Joint Chiefs of Staff? What is the chain of command for orders for the ASA?
Okay, the ASA actually was, I guess you would say, taken down in 1976 and became part of the National Security Agency. But the ASA was formed in 1945 under the command of the National Security Agency, but they actually had a military tactical commander in Arlington Hall, Virginia. The initial mission of the ASA during the Cold War times was to gather intelligence on the Russians and the Chinese and their allies around the world. They formed major military listening posts, if you will, all over the world. The closer you are to communications, the better the clarity, needless to say. So that's how the ASA got started. In 1965, the Army started looking and said, wow, these guys are doing a pretty good job. We'd like to have them under our command.
Of course.
And that's what transpired. Then the ASA became under the United States Army command, but were reporting to the National Security Agency. And every post around the world, there was a National Security Agency technical advisor. So it was really working together with the civilians and the Army to get the communications needed, getting back to the proper channels to the people who made the decisions.
I want to read something here, Jim, and I've Googled this, and I have my laptop in front of me, and looking at this, and the Vietnam War. I want to read this. The first battlefield fatality of the Vietnam War was Specialist Fourth Class James Davis, who was killed in December 1961, and he was assigned to the 3rd Radio Research Unit at Tan Sanh Air Base near Saigon, and there were 92 other members of his unit. Who knew that, folks? The first battlefield fatality. And you guys were targets. Isn't that right, Jim?
Oh, without a doubt. What's the first thing you want to do? You want to get rid of the people who are spying on you, who know about you, who know what you're going to do before you know what you're going to do. That's what the enemy wants to do. If you don't have intelligence, how can you perform? The Army Security Agency in Vietnam was one of the greatest intelligence-gathering units in the history of the United States.
You said that, and that's what just grabbed me. Because nobody knows about you folks. Nobody.
Right. Well, that's the 40 years that are starting.
That's true.
And let me tell you, we took this very seriously. We understood the consequences if we talked. Because there were so many advances that that we knew were coming out later on as far as intelligence gathering.
Like what?
Well, we could actually pinpoint where you stood, if you had a radio transmitter, within 3 square meters of you, anywhere in the world.
Now, and then you could, of course, would you send those to coordinators that would target, then send out a strike? Was that the purpose?
That was definitely one of the parts. The thing that you have to understand in intelligence is you want to monitor your enemy, and if everything's normal, that's acceptable. What you're looking for is the abnormal. Is someone moving? Why is he moving, and where is he moving to? Okay, so what we do is we monitor their communications. As we're monitoring their communications, we keep track exactly where they are. So if the next day we hear nothing, we want to know why. Then it might be 2 or 3 days, then they pop up again. So we find out where they're at. We had the ability to, again, track them within 3 square meters of where they're at. All right, they moved 40 miles. Why did they move 40 miles? It's not a – we actually have analysts of this who did it, but it goes up to the chain of command. This is where this unit was today, this date, and here they are today. What kind of unit is it? Is it a supply unit? Is it a combat unit? That's the kind of things that we, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
How long was your shift?
12 hours a day.
Your shift.
You got a day off. When I last left there, I think we got one day off every 65 days to 70 days.
So you ate at the council?
Sure. Yes, you did.
What was the room like that you were in?
The room was positioned with guys sitting at a desk with a receiver, with headsets on, with a mill in front of them. A mill being a typewriter with all capital letters on it.
Okay. And
there would be 8 to 10 people, and you'd have a room supervisor in there in case somebody had trouble. These guys were very good. They had a mission. They had people that they had to track every day, find out where they were at. And if they didn't find that person when he was supposed to be there and when he was sending, they knew how to search and find him. They were so good that they could tell their man by his transmitter. Not his call signs, his transmitter. They knew what his transmitter sounded like. That's how good they were.
Is that because of how hard you pressed on the keys, something like that?
No. You could. You're not transmitting. You're listening to their transmitter through your headset. They're sending call signs to identify themselves and identify who they want to talk to. So that's the normal way to pick up your person that you're involved with. So if you can't find him, and he might change his call signs to mess you up, these guys were good enough that they could pick up their transmitter and say, that's him, I know that's him.
Wow.
And the people behind them believe him enough, they would come in and they would follow any kind of communications were written, and as soon as it was done, they would tear it off and take it back to the analysts.
Now,
that's how good these guys were.
Just to go back to, I just want, were there any windows in the room?
No, okay. There are no windows whatsoever.
Okay, I mean, and was it a block or was it a tent when you were out in Vietnam? Were you always in a permanent building or what?
Okay, there was everything. There were main stations. One main station in the north part of Vietnam and one in the south. Then we had guys in what we called DSU units. That's direct support units. They would be in a little, they might be in a little like what you call a camper. And there would be two guys in there out in the middle of the field living in bunkers with the MP surrounding them, guarding them. There were guys up in helicopters flying around trying to locate people directly. There were guys in airplanes listening, following. We were all over. We did everything in any way that we could to get where the enemy, if they popped up, we'd have a helicopter and airplane there in a matter of minutes to find out where they're at, what they're doing, because they didn't want to be found. So we were good enough. When we heard that transmitter and knew he's supposed to be there, we would relay that to the helicopters, to the airplanes, and they would get there as soon as possible.
One of the things, folks, that led to so many successes in World War II were the breaking of the codes of the Germans and the Japanese, especially the Japanese. We knew about the attack that was coming to an area near Midway. So this was breaking the codes. Now, in our initial conversation, Jim, you told me that you folks broke a code. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, the enemy, needless to say, knew that we were monitoring them. So what would they do? It isn't easy just to change your code. It has to be something that's structured. And most of your codes are based on an algorithm, something to do with math. And now I'm not intelligent enough to get into that.
Neither am I.
Okay. But I'm sitting there, and all these call signs are wrong, and all the traffic coming across is not normal. So we know they changed their code. So at that point, everybody's heightened. Everybody, I mean, this is from Hanoi High Command all the way down to the guy right outside your gate wanting to rocket you that night or throw a mortar at you. They all changed. So needless to say, we have to find out how they changed their code. And I want to talk about the personnel who did that. These are people with master's degrees, with doctorate degrees. The Army Security Agency had the best of the best. And they would take the information that we were pulling in off of the air, and they would be waiting for us to transmit, and they would run back. And in 24 hours, they broke the new code. That's how good they were.
So there was a common code. Was it the North Vietnamese or the Viet Cong? Whose code was it?
Okay, it's all done on Morse code, Bob. Okay, they're sent on da-da alpha, okay? Or you've heard SOS, did-da-did, da-da-da, did-da-did.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it's all sent, okay? That's how it's all sent across the air. Now, you take, and it's sent in groups, okay, five-letter groups. And within those five-letter groups is a message or a word. And you have to break out what it is. So once you have the code, you can read what we call clear text like it's plain as day. If you don't have the code, it's just a bunch of letters.
And your job, your responsibility, and this facility was to interpret these codes. Is that correct?
Yes, we actually intercepted the messages. And in a room behind us would be the cryptanalysts, and they would take the code, and they would break it down, and they would read it. And again, that's where you had your NSA technical advisor. Is this important? And they would make the decisions.
Okay, Jim, we're coming up on, would you believe it or not, the halfway point to our program. We'll be coming back with Mr. James Walterman, from the U.S. Army Security Agency in Vietnam. We'll be back on this wonderful 990 AM WDEO. So please stay tuned, and we'll be talking about the spook and spy business in Vietnam. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Army Captain Ed Freeman flew 14 rescue missions under intense enemy fire, saving 30 seriously wounded soldiers. Details after this.
Why are you so distant?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
You gonna get a job now or what?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
As a flight leader, Freeman supported a heavily engaged American infantry battalion in the I Trang Valley in the Republic of Vietnam. The unit was almost out of ammunition after taking some of the heaviest casualties of the war, fighting off a relentless attack from a highly motivated, heavily armed enemy force. When the infantry commander closed the helicopter landing zone due to intense direct enemy fire, Freeman risked his own life by flying his unarmed helicopter through a gauntlet of enemy fire time after time, delivering critically needed ammunition, water, and medical supplies to the besieged battalion. His flights had a direct impact on the battle's outcome by providing the engaged units with timely supplies of ammunition critical to their survival. After medical evacuation helicopters refused to fly into the area due to intense enemy fire, Captain Freeman flew 14 separate rescue missions, providing life-saving evacuation of an estimated 30 seriously wounded soldiers, some of whom would not have survived had he not acted. All flights were made into a small emergency landing zone within 100 to 200 yards of the defensive perimeter, where heavily committed units were perilously holding off the attacking elements.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Painted Black, the Rolling Stones, and we're talking about things like black ops and such with Mr. James Walterman, U.S. Army, and intelligence. There we go. He was with the Army Security Agency on two tours in Vietnam. Jim, were you a ditty bopper?
I was a ditty bopper, and I was proud to say, I am proud to say that. What a ditty bopper was is we were the person sitting at that position copying the communications that the enemy was sending to each other.
And was a hog something that was the same?
Well, same thing, the hogs. The hogs were like earlier before I came overseas. They called them hogs. And then we, for some reason, went to ditty boppers.
Okay, there must have been a reason for that, and we're not going to talk about that right now. Remember, we have no delay, Jim. Yes.
Right.
So Catholic Radio. Here we are. But it is military, folks, and these things do happen. But I have we're talking about intercepting and these Morse codes. Well, in our Medal of Honor short form feature, we did Ed Too Tall Freeman, who was part of A Trang Valley. A campaign that was the first real contact with the NVA. We didn't know they were there. Now, you being on that end, what do you think happened? Why did that happen?
Well, a lack of intelligence. The same thing as we didn't believe the Japanese were going to bomb Pearl Harbor. We ignored it. The intelligence is there. It's how you interpret it and what you believe. We did not partake in that. We provided the intelligence to the people above. Did they believe that? Apparently not. But the intelligence was there. A unit like that does not move without communications. It has to have communications. The communications were intercepted, were picked up, they were triangulated, they were placed where they're at. Now, again, if someone above does not believe it, I'm sorry. That's nothing you can do. And unfortunately, that's what happened to those guys.
Very well said. Very well said. Looking at your bullet list that you put down, the first rocket attack at Fubai. Tell us about that.
I was a young kid. Needless to say, I was 18 years old when I got to Vietnam.
And Were you scared?
I was scared to death. Well, let me back up, and I'll tell you, as we landed in Tonsan, we were flying in from the States, and we were flying into Tonsan Nhut Air Force Base. And as we were coming down, it was night, the plane jerked right back up in the air, and we're all looking and wondering what's going on, and we're scared enough to begin with. And a pilot comes over and says, "We're taking ground fire. What we're going to do is make a hot landing, and you'll see flashlights at bunkers. And you'll go down the slides, and you'll run to those bunkers as fast as you can once we're on the ground." Well, would you be scared? I couldn't even talk.
So yeah, but you ran fast, too.
Ran as fast as I could run, yes, without a doubt.
And the man in front of you had footprints on his back as you went.
He did, definitely. So 2 months later, I'm up north in Fubai, and I'm sleeping in my tent, in my cot, and all of a sudden, the siren goes off. Well, I didn't know exactly, because I wasn't there long, what I'm supposed to do. Well, the rocket hit right over the blast wall from where my tent was, and the shrapnel's going through the top of my tent. I knew then what the heck to do. I rolled out on the floor, and I'm crawling on the ground. That's all I have is my skivvies on, nothing else, because it's 100-and-some degrees over there. I crawl into a drainage ditch. I think I'm in the trench line, and this NCO comes over to me and says, "Boy, what the heck are you doing?" And I had to phrase it that way. It is Catholic radio. And I told him, I said, "I'm in the trench line. We just had a rally, and I'm railing and railing." And he's looking at me, and he said, "Get back there and get your hard hat on and get your flak jacket and get your rifle and get over in that trench line." It took me, I don't know how long. I shook. I never slept that night, needless to say. Anybody that says they're not afraid is a fool or a liar.
Yes. And were you, when you were out in the field, and you had your buddy, Gary, right? He was,
yes.
Yes, and let's make a little mention of thank you. Gary Evans, did I get that right?
Gary Evans, yes.
Evans. Okay.
Evans, yes.
And he was one of your protectors out there. So while these guys were protecting you, were you still attacked when you were out in the field?
Well, you would get rocket attacks. Well, in the field, it would be more mortar attacks than rocket attacks. The rocket attacks are from further away. Needless to say, the mortars, they can direct them a lot better to you. So, yes. Everybody out in the field was attacked one time or another. So we had actually the Army Security Agency actually had their own MPs who would protect us. And we were also attached to bigger military units. Like where I was at, we were attached to the 101st Airborne up in Quang Tri. We were attached to the 5th Mechanized Unit. So these we would work with them, and they would help protect us on our outer perimeters. So it was, you know, a joint venture. We were feeding them the intelligence. They were protecting us.
Were you in a personnel carrier?
I was not in a personnel carrier. Most of our guys were not. You're actually in, like I said, a little house trailer.
House trailer?
Yeah, that's about the size that I'm talking about. But it's a truck that's set up with all the communications equipment inside of it. And you pull it, and you sandbag around it, and you build bunkers, and that's where you're at for a while. Or you can live on top of a hill inside a Connex in a bunker. There were different guys did different things in different space all over the country because you needed to get close to the enemy to get their communications. Guys risked their lives every day out in those units. And I mean, those were heroes. These are the guys that served in silence. As you said before, we've never heard of ASA before. These are the guys that went out there and did that every single day.
12 hours. 12-hour shifts, folks.
Out there, it was 24-hour shift. Because when you weren't at your position, you were catnapping and watching for the enemy to come.
Now, there's a way, and I don't know the term, maybe you would be able to help us with it, that you can, that they could reverse, pick up your signal and trace it back to where you were. Now, that meant that as you were, I mean, had to do something with this information, were they able to find out and pinpoint where you were?
They never had the equipment that we had. They couldn't do that. They would pick up a radio transmissions and get it to a point, but they weren't as good as we were. Could they do it that way? Yes. But it's hard to hide what we had. So when you have to clean an area to pull a truck and build a bunker, they know you're there. I mean, you have the Viet Cong, who were basically in most of the area of South Vietnam. You have spies. They have their own spies. I mean, so they knew we were there. They didn't have to have that much intelligence to see us.
I hesitated in using the word spy. What do you feel about that?
Well, everybody thinks if you talk spy, you talk cloak and dagger.
Exactly.
Okay, this wasn't cloak and dagger. We were Morse code interceptors. That's what we did. We, if you want to say it, spied on their communications. I like to say intercepted. That's what we did. We were Morse code interceptors. We intercepted their communications. That's what we did. Old spooks and spies, you know, that's cool. This is 40 years later. That's what we are. That's what we were. So it sounds good. It's a good moniker. But we were interceptors, and we took their interceptions and we used it against them, is what we did.
Tell us about that organization, Old Spooks and Spies.
Old Spooks and Spies is an organization of most of the guys who were over in Vietnam, come back. You know, it's just a military organization, guys that had spent time over there and like to sit back and talk about it. And I like to emphasize this to people. You know, everybody says, you know, why do you sit there and hash over the past?
Oh, no, it's great.
Well, and I tell people, I said, you know, we were never so alive in our lives. Our adrenaline was pumping all the time while we were over there. We bonded like people don't understand how you bond. And it's fun. It's a release. And also another thing that I will say at that point, when we came back home, you know, there weren't flag-waving people when we came home. It was the opposite. When I came through San Francisco the first time, there were people yelling and protesting against us. So that sort of tightened us and made us a tighter group. You know, we're Vietnam veterans. We're old spooks and spies. We did this because we served our country, and we're proud that we served our country. And that's what makes us closer, and that's what makes that organization so good.
Dale and I often say that when we're sitting down yakking, that it's the most defining moment in our lives when we were in the military. And I know we're going to hear, well, it was when we got married. No, it wasn't. And it's not a slam on marriage or having children or graduating from college or what. It was that bonding. It was that you were called upon to do a job. You did your job, whether you were walking guard at a remote Fort Riley, Kansas motor pool somewhere at 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of January, or you were in the jungles of Vietnam, or you're in Afghanistan in the mountains. We did our job, the most defining moment of our lives. So, yes, I couldn't help but start thinking about that, and I like that. Silent servers. I like that. We've got a few more minutes before our next break. All right. Now, let's see here. Mortar attack in Quang Tri. Why don't you let us know about that?
I was up in Quang Tri. That was another support unit that we had from our main base. A lot happened to me my first couple of months in country. I'm up there, still a young kid. My fatigues and guys that left this were still green. They weren't faded yet. And they lived in Quonset huts up there. So it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm out using, they didn't have urinals. We all know they had a bomb casing in the ground, and that's what you did. You relieve yourself. So I'm standing doing that, and in comes a mortar. I hear it come in. It lands about 30 feet away from me.
Oh, my God.
I am standing there waiting to die. The most peaceful feeling I've ever had in my life.
We've never had anybody ever describe something like that on this program in 10 years, Jim.
Well, this is a fact. I've never had a more peaceful feeling in my life at that time. I was ready to go. And all of a sudden, something said to me, it's not your time, or someone. And then at that instance, another mortar hit the top of a hooch over to about 40 yards away from me. And the guy come running out, grabbed me, threw me on the ground. The mortar did not go off, the first one that landed next to me. The EOD team came over, that's the demolition team, the next within hours, and, you know, closed off the area, pulled it out. Captain calls me in the next morning, and he says, you're a lucky boy. I said, yes, sir. I said, I know that. He said, no. He said, you don't understand. He said, that firing pin ignited. He said, it didn't go off. It should have gone off. And that's been a defining moment for me.
Amen.
My whole life.
Amen. Amen. Well, we're coming up on our three-quarter mark. Nina's shaking her head. So, Jim, why don't you hold your thought? We're going to have Jim's wife, Jan, on in the last segment. So you're going to be coming right back here to WDEO 990 AM. If you got a question for our guest, 877-573-7825. We'll be right back. For the past 100 years, Amish Furniture Craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com. Music from the Vietnam era. Did you listen to Adrian Crownhour when you were over there, Jim?
I did not.
Did you listen to Armed Forces Radio while you were over there?
No.
Oh, okay.
We were tired of listening to radios all day long.
All day long. Got it. Yeah.
We listened to the music, and they had a jukebox in the EM club that we put up, and we'd have music in there, but, you know, most of the guys, that's where we went. We went to the bar when we had time.
Well, this brings us to Jim's wife, Jan Walterman, and Jan was the reason that I got in touch with Jim, because I got an email from Jan regarding a project that she started. There we go. Reached over and punched that up. So now, Jan, welcome to Veterans Radio, Jan.
Good morning, Bob.
I'm looking here at what you... Oh, by the way, folks, you want to get yourself out a pen, pencil, crayon, something, to write down the address, website address for this particular project that Jan... Jan has Donnie Rice, 100% disabled Vietnam War veteran. There we go. And he loves to fish. Well, why don't you tell us about that, Jan? Go ahead. Give us a story.
Sure. Donnie Rice is a friend of mine. We went to high school together. And, of course, you never dream that that cute blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy is going to wind up in Vietnam and then be completely disabled the rest of his life. But he served with the Army back in 1971. And what happened, he had, I think, one or two days left in his tour when his fire base was overrun and his bunker took a direct hit. As he tells the story, he was blinded, he was wounded, and he was crawling out, of course, into the dark night, and he wound up right in the hands of the Viet Cong. Well, they were dragging him, of course, trying to take him captive, and he bit the hand of the guy who was dragging him. So the Viet Cong threw him down and just shot him up one side and down the other and left him for dead. And if his buddy, who was on a helicopter, hadn't forced that pilot to come in and rescue him, he surely would have died there on the jungle floor. So it was all a combination of little miracles that actually got him out of there. But he's had a long struggle ahead of him, and he still faces these struggles every day. He spent about 2.5 years in and out of Walter Reed. He's had over 15 surgeries. He lost sight in one eye. Had shoulder and hip replacement, artificial heart valve. He actually just got out of the hospital a week ago fighting another infection. He still, and look how long this is, what, 40-some years, he still has shrapnel coming out of his body from wounds that he suffered. So one thing that he enjoys doing is fishing. He cannot afford to buy his own fishing boat. So I just started a little project on the GoFundMe site to try to raise some money to get him a fishing boat. Now, his ultimate dream is for a smoker craft bass boat, which they're expensive. They're about $20,000. But whatever money we raise will be used to buy him either a used fishing boat or just send him on a nice fishing trip. So anybody who is interested in helping can go to the GoFundMe.com site. It's www.GoFundMe.com. And just type in fishing boat. And Donnie Rice, you'll see the picture. There's a little video on there that shows Donnie and his wife, Patty, and details a little bit about his story. I just feel if we could all give a little, we can bring much joy to someone who gave a lot. He's just one of the many unsung heroes from the Vietnam War.
Well, that's what Veterans Radio all about. Let's take the unsung and make them songs. That's what we do, and that's exactly what
we're doing
with you. And to think that you took up and on your time, on your personal time, to begin this project. How long have you folks been doing this?
We just started this project about 2 or 3 months ago, trying to get the word out, you know, to everybody. Donnie doesn't know we're doing this. We're trying to do it as a surprise. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, folks. So, again, it's GoFundMe.com/, right?
Yeah, yes. I think it's / 37YJBO.
So let's,
but they can also just go there and type in fishing boat, and Donnie writes, it'll come up. Yes.
Okay. Now, does Donnie live locally?
He does. He lives near us here. We're in right near Hamilton, Ohio, so he's real close to us.
Oh, so okay, so he's down in the Cincinnati area, right?
Yes.
And is he active in any veterans organizations that you know
of? He is. He's very active. He does the, I believe it's the Honor Guard. My husband can probably help me out here with all this military.
Yeah, Bobby, excuse me.
Go ahead, jump in.
He's a member of the Vietnam Veterans of America. He still is a very patriotic person. I'd like to talk to my fellow brothers.
Okay.
This guy has given his life. He's had pain every day since 1971. He can't work. He's gone through operation after operation after operation. And this is something small that we can give him. So I ask you, brothers, if you can help, please go to that site and help.
Let's give that again. Give that site again. GoFund.
It's www.gofundme, and then it's /37YJBO, or go to GoFundMe.com and type in fishing boat. Sometimes it's easier to pull it up that way.
And, of course, you'll take any size donation, of course.
Oh,
of course.
Sure, anything.
What if somebody's,
$5, $10, $20.
What if somebody's got a boat?
Oh, that would be awesome. Just give them my email.
That would be fantastic. And this being the Great Lakes states, we have 1 million veterans in Michigan. Sure, somebody there must have a boat. Where does Donnie go fishing?
He actually goes up to Lake Erie quite a bit. And there are a lot of lakes around here in Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana that he fishes. But he really likes to go. And I'm not a fisherman, so I don't know. But I know he goes up to Lake Erie a lot.
And Lake St. Clair, bass. I happen to bass fish with my son and grandson. So I'm very familiar with bass boats and how particular they are that they need to be. And you got to have one to fish for the bass. Okay, well, this is for Donnie Rice. We will be mentioning this throughout subsequent programs. Let's get this guy a boat. Come on, folks. Let's get this guy a boat. He did his job, and he did his job, and he came back, and now we have an opportunity that we can show. I don't like that word appreciation. My folks used to use that a lot. I don't like that. That we can show our honor to somebody like Donnie Rice. He also was awarded two Purple Hearts, the Bronze Star and a POW medal. So this gentleman has earned. I'm looking at a couple of photos of him. One looks like there he is, that blonde-haired kid, and there he is now, what he looks like today. But I could see, Jan, what you meant. He was just a kid. He represented so many of us that were doing our duty in the Army. Isn't that right?
Absolutely.
And when will you be talking to Donnie next?
We'll probably see him this weekend. We can't tell him we were on the radio yet, but we'll see what happens.
No,
we'll
I know.
We'll let him listen to it in the archives.
I know, and come on, folks. We want to keep this a surprise. But I like the idea. Somebody out there has a boat. Somebody that's listening to this program has a boat, knows somebody with a boat. Ah, we don't need it anymore. Oh, by the way, is this a nonprofit, this GoFundMe?
GoFundMe is a website that's used for all kinds of causes to raise money. I doubt that they themselves are a nonprofit, but a lot of nonprofits use it.
Okay. So it would be a donation, period. You don't always have to get into that IRS stuff, folks. You got something to donate, you have something that somebody can use, just let them use it, have it, what? I like to do that. Call it recycling, right? Let it move on. So somebody out there does have a boat. Somebody out there also has a checkbook. Write that check. I think $100 would be just terrific. And wouldn't that be nice to see those checks come rolling in? And we can go out and before the season ends in October for bass, we'll have Donnie Rice out there on Lake St. Clair. Jan, thank you very much for being on the program.
Well, thank you, Bob, for that'll make a dream come true for him. Thank you so much.
Okay. One more time, folks. It's GoFundMe/37YJE like an echo, O like an omega. GoFundMe/37YJEO. We've got a minute left to go. James, thank you very much for being on our program. Time goes by fast, doesn't it?
It does real fast, and I appreciate what you're doing for the veterans and the military around the world. You know, we need more dedicated Americans in this country.
And I think we have them, and we're out here at Veterans Radio telling that particular story. So, Jim and Jan, God bless you, and God bless Ohio. Yes, it's a great, great state when it comes. That's right, it's a great state when it comes to military. So, okay, here we go.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Nina, yeah. Oh, there it is. There's the music in the background. Ah, yes. We actually have a band out here, folks, and no, not really. So we're headed out for the parking lot, Nina and I. You folks will be heading out to having a wonderful day today in the summer. And wherever you're at, cooking out, think about our military boys and girls, men and women who are out there serving our country. Until next week, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.